Hi, everybody, and welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast. Special episode, I guess. It's a solo mission for me. Jackson won't be here tonight. I apologize if you do tune in to listen to him. We're just trying something a little bit different. I am going to sort of cover some Impact Wrestling, No Surrender, as well as the weekly show from this week. And this is something that Jack doesn't generally watch anyways, so in the interest of keeping our Saturday broadcast a little bit shorter, because to be honest, we sit down and do that thing pretty much in one shot. And if we include all of these things, it's going to take a long time. So we're sort of experimenting with new formats and new things, because as we sort of exit this coronavirus cocoon, hopefully we're going to have to sort of adjust things, because we won't be always able to just sit down for 3 hours and talk wrestling on Saturdays once life gets back to normal. So this is me trying my first ever solo mission. I have no idea how it's going to go. I apologize if it's terrible, but we're just going to talk about some Impact No Surrender, I thought, first, and then we'll move into the Impact show from this week. So we'll save all the banter for tomorrow's flagship Saturday show with Jack when he's here. So I think we should probably just get right into this right now, and we'll talk about Impact Wrestling No Surrender, sort of a quick review. So the show starts, the first match we get is going to be Rosemary, Crazy Steve, and Black Taurus facing Tennille Dashwood, Larry D, AC Romero. So it's basically Triple XL versus Decay, obviously. And Decay are the winners here when Black Taurus hits his rather impressive finisher. Even more impressive, he delivered it to Larry D, who is a big man. I thought Black Taurus, again, looked really good. He is really powerful and explosive. I find him really interesting. He hits a combination of power moves as well as like really crazy looking fast dives. Just the combination of speed and power, and the fact that he wrestles in that crazy mask. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It's pretty impressive that he wrestles in this thing. Overall, I thought the match was decent. Really highlighted by Black Taurus, who I find fascinating so far. So I would have preferred a bit more excitement in an opener to a pay-per-view, but again, this is what we always say in FNS Wrestling, right? This was fine. It was fine, and the Black Taurus parts, in my opinion, were a little bit better than fine. So not an ideal opener for me, but I didn't think it was terrible either. Then we sort of transition into a tag team match here. We get Eddie Edwards and Matt Cardona versus Brian Myers and Hernandez. So this match, again, without getting into too many details, it ended with Eddie taking out Hernandez with a suicide dive, sort of leaving the other two men in the ring. Cardona missed his radio silence, formerly the Rough Rider, and Myers hits his clothesline, which makes me giggle a little bit every time that his finisher is a clothesline, but it does, again, pick up the win. So clearly it's some sort of devastating clothesline. So again, I would put this in the category of a decent match, but not really spectacular. It didn't feel, to be honest, much different from a TV match. But I think there's more to come with this feud, right? We're obviously working towards a Myers-Cardona sort of one-on-one match. And this is one of the stops along the way. So it was fine for what it was. But again, nothing extraordinary that I would encourage anyone to go out and seek. We then move into a family battle between Diener and the newly christened Jake Something. So Jake Something, this was his indie name and gimmick as far as I know, and I just am on the record saying that he needed a change, Diener needed a change. They've been doing the Diener cousin shtick for far too long in my opinion, so I've been really impressed with Diener's sort of reinvention, and Violent by Design are one of the more consistently entertaining things on Impact, I think. So this match, basically, again, without getting into too many details, Jake fights off interference from Violent by Design. He ends up hitting a black hole slam to Diener for the win. I thought the match was good enough. Like, I don't have anything glowing to say. It's tough because we just came off of watching NXT Vengeance Day, right? Takeover Vengeance Day, which was just an absolute fantastic show. So sort of this is kind of paling in comparison, but this match wasn't bad. It showcased Jake's new character, the one he's used on the indies, as I said. And Diener continues to impress me with this new character and this sort of new demeanor in the ring, like much more aggressive, less of a comedy character, obviously, and just more serious. And he looks good as well. I think Jake has the potential to be a star in Impact. He has a great look. He's a big dude. He's not bad in the ring at all. his promos are definitely a weak point as far as I'm concerned, but that doesn't really hold everybody back, right? Like, to me, you've got the champion of this company, Rich Swann, who I think his promos are bad to awful generally, and obviously it hasn't stopped him from getting to the main event spot in this company. So I think this is a good move for both of the Deaners to just sort of freshen up their look. They can start out feuding with each other and then sort of go from there, and I think there's a spot for both of them going forward. Maybe Jake, just because of his size and everything, getting a little bit more attention than Deaner, but I think there's a spot for both of them in Impact, right? To me, it's about getting the right types of talent for Impact, ones that sort of fit in there and aren't necessarily going to flee elsewhere the first time they get a chance. And I think these two guys might fit into that category. So I'm happy for Jake that he's doing something new. So the match was okay, nothing amazing. Then the pay-per-view really picked up for me. We get the X Division Revolver match, and that is Daivari versus Suicide versus Willie Mack versus Ace Austin versus Trey Miguel versus Blake Christian, recently signed to WWE apparently, and Chris Bay. So first of all, I'd like to start out by saying that I think this is a cool idea for a match, and I think it's a keeper for a special match for Impact, and maybe could be borrowed by some other companies as well. It's a new effective way to have a multi-person match, and I always appreciate that because it's a little more creative than just throwing them all in the ring together, right? So the basic idea, if you didn't watch it in the Revolver match, is it's always a triple threat match. So three wrestlers start out, and then as they get eliminated, a new person will come in, right? So this was the first match on this card that really felt like a pay-per-view quality match to me. Like, this was something a little bit different and special and didn't feel like it was just an episode of Impact. So I was happy for that, obviously. The previous matches weren't bad. They just weren't really compelling, in my opinion, whereas this one I really got into. So just to sort of summarize it quickly, Suicide and Miguel start out as the first two in the ring, sorry. And the first few eliminations happen rather quickly, but that wasn't a negative for me. I thought that's what should happen, right? Because I had a feeling who the final three were going to be. At least that's who I really wanted to see in the final three. And we do end up with the final three of Ace Austin, Trey Miguel, and Josh Alexander. And I agree with this choice. I also agree with getting the other competitors, other than Bay. You know how I feel about Bay if you listen to our podcast. But Suicide, Daivari, Willie Mack aren't the focus of this division right now. I didn't figure they were going to be around too long in this match, and they weren't, and I'm totally okay with that. I thoroughly enjoyed the action between the final three of Alexander, Ace Austin, and Trey Miguel, and I was really happy with the outcome as well. So basically, what you're going to get, the finish comes when Alexander stacks both of the other competitors for a Death Valley driver to two people at once, which was impressive. Then he powerbombs Ace Austin onto his knee and onto Alexander's own knee. And he follows up with the double underhook pile driver, which is known as the J-Driller, which I think looks fantastic for the win. And Josh Alexander becomes the number one contender for the X Division Championship. I thoroughly enjoyed this match, especially the action between the final three competitors. And I think this is what Impact needs to do more of, right? This is, for me, in my opinion, the near future of Impact represented in these three guys, along with Moose and Chris Bay. I think those are the five. And I'm not even the biggest Trey Miguel fan, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, but I do understand and see the potential there, right? I do see that he could be a big part of this company going forward. So I think that if it's me running this company, that's my core group that I'm going to sort of run with for the next little while. And I'm going to try and plan some stories and some arcs that include those guys, because I think they are the most entertaining and they're also relatively fresh and not cast offs from some other company, right? And I think that kind of matters, at least it does for me. So I love the finishing sequence of this match. And as a result, sort of Alexander looks really strong coming out of this match. And this new match type, this Revolver, was a big success in my opinion. And I think it's something that they can sort of go back to when they have the talent and the sort of storyline to facilitate it. So to this point in the pay-per-view, by far my favorite match, one that I would actually say go see, especially the final three. I thought it was really well done and really entertaining. I was very happy. So we then get the women's tag team, or sorry, the knockouts, as I should say. Tag team championship match, and that's Fire and Flava versus Havoc and Nevaeh again, as you would say. So Fire and Flava, I was really happy to see. They do their thing during their entrance, and I love it every time. There's just so much attitude and charisma from these two, And again, as I always say, just let them interact and let them do their thing and don't overscript them and don't lean into the comedy and stuff too much. Just, they're great. Just having pretty straightforward dialogue, pretty straightforward storylines, and just let their charisma and their attitude sort of take over. That would be my wish for Impact to handle this tag team, because I think they're fantastic. So anyways, long story short, Nevaeh takes a cutter on a street sign and also takes the pinfall there as Fire and Flava retain their titles. And I guess the storyline coming out of this is Nevaeh is really dejected after yet another sort of coming up short again against this tag team. And she sort of walks to the back and leaves Havoc standing in the ring alone, sort of leaving us to wonder what's going on. So I kind of like that little storyline. It's something to look forward to on the next episode of Impact to see where this storyline is going. And they will deal with it on Impact as well. So Hogan and Steels win what I thought was a pretty good match. The second half to me was better. The first half was not super exciting, but I thought the second half was pretty good. The entire match suffers slightly for me because this is seemingly the millionth time that these two teams have had some sort of interaction or match or whatever. I think all four of them are talented women. They just need new contenders in this division. I'm happy again that there's some development with the Havoc and Nevaeh situation because they've been sort of treading water on Impact for quite a while, and I think both of them are talented women, so just freshen it up. Change what they're doing a little bit. Add some interest to their storyline, which it looks like they're trying to do. So that's not bad. So this match was second half better than the first. Overall, a pretty decent match. I'm a big fan of Hogan and Steels. I think they're just going to keep getting better in the ring. I think they're already fantastic as characters. So should be a focus of that division going forward, especially the tag division for sure. So I'm happy with the outcome of this match. Happy that it looks like we're moving on from these two teams sort of interacting, and happy that Havoc and Nevaeh in general will have something new to do, it looks like. The next match we get, I think things picked back up here again, in my opinion, and that was the X Division Championship match between Rohit Raju versus TJP. And of course, classic Rohit, the heel, attacks TJP before the match begins, so there's all kinds of action happening outside before the bell has actually run, including Mahabali Shera being there a little bit. So eventually Rohit hits a suplex on the ramp, and the match officially begins shortly after that as they get to the ring. And this was basically the story of two guys who know each other very well and are just sort of struggling to gain an advantage because they have wrestled many times recently. The finish comes when Shera attempts to interfere, but he gets taken out accidentally by Rohit, and then it's followed by pretty immediately by the Mamba Splash for the win for TJP. So these guys have wrestled a million times too, and at the risk of sounding hypocritical, because I did just criticize the staleness of the women's tag matchup right before this, I really enjoyed this match and continue to honestly, you know, if you listen to this podcast, be really impressed with the improvement in Rohit over the past couple of years in all areas, in the ring, on the mic, just his character work. He is one of their more consistent performers, and I've noticed other people are starting to notice this too. I feel like we on FNS Wrestling were me because I'm the one really looking at Impact. Not to pat myself on the back, but I've been kind of at the forefront of this. Rohit deserves some attention and praise. The guy is really good. He's consistently entertaining on a product that is, no offense to them, not consistently entertaining, but he is. And TJP is so impressive in the ring and just so smooth. I mean, it's too bad that, in my opinion, he kind of suffers from anti-charisma. I have no interest in anything TJP does or says outside of a wrestling ring, but when he's in there, he is super talented and fluid. So this made for a really entertaining match, in my opinion, and I quite enjoyed it. We then sort of hit another down note a little bit, come down from what I thought was a really good match, and that's the six-woman tag team match involving Deonna Purrazzo, Susan and Kimber Lee versus Jordan Grace, Jazz, and ODB. So the finish to this one comes when Kimber Lee does a flip to the outside to take out people, and that leaves Jazz an opportunity in the ring to lock an STF onto Susan, and Susan fairly quickly taps out. If I'm being honest, I did not enjoy this match at all. Jazz and ODB, no offense to them, are past their prime, and I'm really not enjoying watching them in ring in the last however long they've been back sort of active in ring. It hasn't looked good to me. And I don't understand why they're getting so much time on television and pay-per-views on a weekly basis. I think there's other areas you could spend that same amount of time that would be better served building some younger people or focusing on a different division altogether. So that's my main criticism of this. There's just not, I don't want to see them wrestle, and they were a big part of this match, and it's just not interesting to me. At one point in the match, Jazz is blinded by a thumb to the eye and accidentally hits Jordynne Grace. So this has to be for some reason, right? And I'm likely not going to enjoy the result because I imagine it's going to lead to a singles match between the two of them, which doesn't interest me. And if Jazz is the one to go heel, then maybe that'll help her a little bit. But I really like Jordynne Grace. I think she's very good, and I think she should be more in the top tier of this division. So I don't love that she's going to be sort of working with Jazz for an extended period because I don't think it's going to help her. But maybe I'm wrong. Susan's gimmick seems to be she doesn't know how to wrestle. And that means, at least for me in this match, there's only Perrazzo and Grace that interest me at all. I don't understand taking a woman that can actually wrestle really well and giving her a gimmick where she can't wrestle and sort of having it go on for weeks as it has, when I feel like this division is sort of slipping in recent weeks. When we started this podcast, I would praise the women's division, the knockouts division in Impact, as one of their strengths. But if you're looking at it right now, or for me, I ask myself, who's a believable opponent for Deonna Purrazzo right now? I don't have an answer for that. For me, the top tier of this division should be Purrazzo, Jordynne Grace, Sue Young, not Susan, maybe Kiera Hogan if she were to become a single. And I'm not seeing much else, honestly, there. Losing Taya and Kylie Rae kind of close together has really hurt the depth of this division, I think, and Impact as well, not just the fault of the talent. I don't think Impact has been doing a great job of building the knockouts division recently. So I'm not sure what needs to happen here, but I really don't know where Deonna Purrazzo, she's fantastic. She's a great champion, and she has great matches. I really enjoyed some of her matches with Jordynne Grace, but I don't know who's next in line for a shot with her, and I don't know who it would be that will be believable and or entertaining. So I think Impact has some work to do in the knockouts division right now, both in the singles and the tag division, because at one point when that tag division started, it seemed like every woman was partnered up with somebody, and I was telling Jack on the podcast, like, this could be really fun because most of the women are sort of paired up in some way in Impact. But it really, other than Hogan and Steels, it's been Nevea and Havoc, and that's been pretty much it. So they need to do some work here, in my opinion, and I'm hopeful. You gotta be hopeful. We then move into what I thought sort of picked up the pace again, and that was the Impact Tag Team Championship match between the Good Brothers, Private Party, and Beer Gun, which is James Storm and Chris Sabin, obviously. And my first sarcastic question at the top of my notes is, gee, I wonder if the Good Brothers will retain. Spoiler alert, they do, and they always will, as far as I can tell. This was a pretty fun match, though, despite my feelings about the Good Brothers, mostly just Gallows. Anderson, I don't have too much of an issue with. A pretty fun match. At one point, we do get the classic signature parade, one after the other, and it ended with a big Eye of the Storms by James Storm to Mark Quinn for a near fall. Then Gallows gets a chair, and Matt Hardy delivers a twist of fate to Storm. Private Party actually look poised to take this win, but Carl Anderson sort of sneakily tags the foot of Quinn and obviously steals the win. I did enjoy this match, but the outcome was never in doubt, since the Good Brothers, as far as I can tell, have the ability to book their own match finishes and basically have decided they're just never going to lose or never going to make anyone look better other than themselves. Private Party going somewhere else other than AEW to get more seasoning also makes sense to me, because I find them somewhat sloppy at times. They just kind of try and do too much, right? They look like at times they're trying to run before they really have mastered walking. Undeniable athleticism and talent there. They just need a bit more seasoning and the odd time to maybe slow down a little bit. So working with Gallows will force you to slow down, in my opinion. So I thought they looked pretty good here, and I did enjoy this match. It was a pretty fun three-way tag team match, I guess. Then that takes us to the main event, which I have to admit I had pretty low expectations going into this, mostly because I'm skeptical of Dreamer's abilities at this point in his career. And the championship matches, of course, between the champion Rich Swann and the 50-year-old challenger Tommy Dreamer. And it was actually, Dreamer put up a surprisingly good fight here, and I was in fact pretty entertained by this match, and again, I really wasn't expecting to be. The finish came when Swan kicks out of a nice Spicoli driver from Dreamer. He kicks Dreamer in the face and then hits his Phoenix Splash for the win. Moose then, who on a side note is absolutely in the best shape I've ever seen him. He is ripped and just looking super impressive right now. He comes to the ring and attacks Swan's leg before hitting his sort of flipping spear to Dreamer. And the show basically goes almost, the pay-per-view proper, I guess, ends with Moose in the ring holding the TNA and Impact Championships high up in the air. And I have to say, he looks fantastic. Like this is obviously where they're going next, is Moose and Swan. And this match, frankly, over-delivered for me. And I enjoy the build to Moose and Swan. I know I'm not the biggest fan of Swan as a champion of this company. I don't think he's a great choice in that position. And I think Moose is. So I think hopefully that's what we're working towards, is going to be a Moose championship run. So we'll see. I thought this match, as I said, it over-delivered for me. Dreamer's new... doing this whole I'm trying to just do good things and I'm trying to do good things for wrestling gimmick is actually kind of working for me. And his sort of heartfelt promos lately in support of this, I thought, have been pretty believable and good. Like, I think they found a nice little niche for Dreamer to be in right now. It's kind of feels like he's the gatekeeper to the main event. And that's okay, because he's doing a good job of it right now, I think. A 50-year-old guy especially. Kudos to him, because I've been critical of him in the past, obviously. Like, I don't know how much I need to see Tommy Dreamer and Ken Shamrock wrestling in 2021, and Rhino. Oh, he's okay sometimes too, but in this match, I thought he was okay. So then we get the Impact logo basically flashes as though the show is over. They're kind of stealing that move from NXT, I feel like. And then we get a New Japan endorsed vignette for David Finlay and Juice Robinson. So they are making their way to Impact, and I thought that was a nice touch to garner some interest for next week's Impact show, right? You're getting some intrigue. We've got this crossover between multiple companies going on in wrestling right now, which is a pretty cool thing for wrestling fans, I think. And this is our first sort of flash of New Japan is going to be making an appearance in Impact Wrestling, and I, for one, am all for it. I've recently become a fan of David Finlay. I can't remember where I most recently saw him wrestle, but I thought he has improved a ton too and looked really good. And Juice Robinson's always good, and he's sort of switched his look and character up a little bit recently, I think, which is not a bad idea for him. So I thought that was an interesting little nugget for people to latch on to leading into the weekly show coming up. So I like the end to this. And overall, now about this show, it was a bit of a roller coaster ride. But I do have to admit, I think there were more highs than lows. So the highs for me would be the X Division Revolver match, the X Division match, the tag team title match, and the main event even, I would include that, and the reveal that Finn Juice is coming to Impact from New Japan. I thought those were sort of the highlights. The lows for me would definitely be the six-woman tag match, which I didn't enjoy at all. The opener was a bit underwhelming other than the Black Taurus parts. And the remaining matches sort of fall somewhere in between, right? They were neither high or a low. You've got that sort of flat part on the roller coaster, I guess, would be the other matches. So I would say we always try to give grades here. I would give this show a grade of a solid B, right? So solid, not spectacular. I'm not sorry I watched it, but I wouldn't urge anyone to go out of their way to see it either. Maybe the Revolver match, especially the final three. So a solid offering from Impact, better than some of the things they have done. But again, there were some low points to this show. Overall, a solid show. I gave it a B. So that wraps up the pay-per-view on Saturday. So now we'll just sort of transition into looking at this Tuesday, I think it was. Yeah, which would be February 16th episode of Impact Wrestling, sort of coming on the heels of this pay-per-view that we just discussed. So let's see how things develop between these two shows. And I'm happy to say that I am recapping a pretty strong, in my opinion, and enjoyable episode of Impact, because I find I never know what I'm going to get with Impact. We rate, as you've seen, we give shows letter grades. Impact gets some in the C's, which is pretty low for me. I'm usually pretty optimistic and positive. Anything from, you know, C's to high B's, they don't normally get in the A range for me, but maybe I'm a tough marker. I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting too much, but I'm happy. For me, as a Canadian, our sort of grading system is different. A B is like 70 to 79%. in Canada. I know it's different in the States, so I don't know if that makes a difference, but when I say it's a B show, that's a good solid show. So let's talk about Impact from this week. The show starts with a recap, of course, of the Good Brothers and Rich Swann retaining their titles at No Surrender, and then we move straight into the opening match for the X Division Championship, and that is TJP versus Josh Alexander, since Alexander, as we just discussed, or I just monologued, I guess it's not a discussion if nobody else is here talking with me. Alexander won the Revolver match at No Surrender, so he has his championship shot right here at the beginning of this show. And man, I got to tell you, I thought this was another excellent opener on an episode of Impact. Saw strong performances by both of these guys. There was lots of back and forth with holds and reversals. And the commentary team, especially Stryker, really putting over Josh Alexander, which I appreciate. I do have some criticisms of Stryker's commentary. He, at times, is very dramatic, right? Like, he talks like everything is these super high dramatic stakes, like everything is Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. And the problem with that is it's like a match full of high spots, right? Or a show, if you watch a pay-per-view, an indie show that's nonstop high spots, they start to sort of lose all meaning, and this you sort of start doubting the sincerity when he is so dramatic and just animated about so many things all of the time. I feel like he needs to just dial it back a little bit, because there is room for that kind of commentary, but it really needs to be saved for when it is something important, it is something dramatic, and it's not just something sort of run-of-the-mill where he still tries to add that extra flair to. So that's something, I mean, maybe that's me nitpicking, I don't know. I still prefer it to Josh Matthews by far. But I did start to notice after watching these two shows that he is very, very, like, everything is a very big deal and very important and very dramatic. And I feel he's running the risk of it sort of just losing some of the meaning, because everything can't be that profound and important. So dial it back, Matt Stryker, I guess that's what I'm saying. So again, lots of back and forth, reversals, transitions, and the finish sees TJP, unfortunately, in my opinion, picking up the win after hitting a successful Mamba splash. Regardless of the outcome, I really did enjoy this match as they were given time. One of my issues sometimes with Impact, the TV show, is you look and it's like 4-minute match, 4-minute match, 5-minute match, 4-minute match. So this one was given a bit of time, which is somewhat rare because it is the home of the 4-minute match, it seems like. And both of these guys are excellent in the ring. I obviously would have preferred Alexander win here because, as I said earlier, TJP does nothing for me outside of his in-ring work. And I think Alexander is actually a better promo than I thought he was. It's just when you're tagging with Ethan Page, you don't need to say anything because that guy is an amazing talker and he loves to talk. So it's kind of like Alexander didn't get much chance to talk. There's not a lot of room to get a word in edgewise when you're with Ethan Page, right? So as I've seen Alexander in recent weeks sort of on his own and doing promos, I thought they actually have sounded pretty good, and he's maybe a little better than I thought he was. So with all of that being considered, I think this guy is a major single star for this company going forward, if they want him to be. Again, he's not a guy that's really known for being anywhere else. You can sort of treat him as he's one of Impact's own. He's got good size, he's amazing in the ring, and he can talk. So I'm hoping that they recognize this. It seems like they have, and that they have bigger plans for him than maybe the X Division. Although I would be fine if he does hold the X Division title too. I think he could have a long run with it because he is just so technically sound. So anyways, really thought this was a cool opener. Then we get Gia Miller backstage, and she wants to know what Tommy Dreamer was doing in Scott D'Amore's office just before this. Dreamer says he's going to beat some sense into Moose tonight, and it's an old school rules match. So again, seems like Dreamer's new role is this main event gatekeeper, and I haven't hated it so far. As I mentioned, talking about No Surrender, I kind of like this. He's just trying to do good. He's trying to do good for wrestling. So he feels like Moose needs to be held accountable because he's not doing things that are good for wrestling. So Dreamer's going to do his best to sort of hold Moose accountable for his actions. So that's not a bad idea for a story for me. So far, it's been an enjoyable show. Let's keep going. We then get Brian Myers, and he's backstage with Hernandez. He's giving Hernandez the rest of the agreed-upon fee since they were successful in their match at No Surrender. So they make the same deal for tonight, where Hernandez will get half of the money now and half of the money after he wins, because Hernandez has a match coming up tonight against Cardona one-on-one. So Falaba, who we learned, unfortunately, through the not my favorite for sure Swingers Palace segments recently, he has a gambling problem and he needs money to support that problem. So he shows up as the money's changing hands, sort of, and he wants a loan from Hernandez, and he's basically promising to double Hernandez's money. He asks Hernandez for $20, but Hernandez gives him $10 and says to go double it and bring it back to him. So I like the first part of this. I don't think the Falaba was necessary. And if you're a gambler to the point where you've been gambling and you're broke, $10 and $20 is not the stakes that a gambler is going to be looking for. But anyways, that's just me knowing something about gambling and whatnot. A hardcore gambler is probably not seeking $20 to try and get even if they've gone completely broke. But anyways, that's me nitpicking. For me, this kind of worked up until, I didn't love the Falaba interaction, but it wasn't enough to really anger me or anything. But Myers really works well as a slimy heel, I think. And Hernandez works pretty well as his paid muscle, who really feels nothing for Myers and cares nothing about Myers either way. Their interaction here was good, I think. I like the majority of this segment. Could have lived without the Falaba interaction, especially after seeing what it's going to lead to later in the show. Sigh. But anyways, again, so far this show is rolling pretty well for me. We then get Matt and D'Lo talking about Finn Juice, who will take on Reno Scum tonight, who I had forgotten were even there. We are also reminded of the Dreamer versus Moose old school rules match that will be on as well. We then move into a four-way match in the X division between Willie Mack, Daivari, Suicide, and Trey Miguel. And going into this, just looking at who it was, my immediate impression was that this was a match clearly to build Trey Miguel back since he didn't win the Revolver match, but he is sort of the focus right now as he's re-signed and returning to Impact. And that's exactly what this was. And it was a decent little sprint. It was really short considering it involved four people, so it's sort of back to that Impact, very quick match on the TV. Trey eventually hits his top rope Meteora to Suicide for the win. And again, there was no doubt who was going to win this match, so it hurt it a little bit for me in terms of my interest. I'm not the biggest fan of Trey Miguel, as I said earlier in this podcast. He is amazingly quick and incredibly impressive athlete. Like, I can't take that away from him. It's just that his move often lacked impact, no pun intended, for me. Sure, you did a crazy flips at a million miles an hour, but the result sometimes looks kind of soft. And it's funny because we were just reviewing TakeOver, and it's kind of the opposite with MSK. Their high risk and flippy stuff seems to have impact and seems to make sense. They're doing it sort of in so quickly that it's catching their opponents off guard. Nobody has to stand around and wait for them to be jumped on and things. And their moves actually look like they have impact. To give Trey credit, he is trying to embrace sort of a more aggressive character, I think, since his return. And I'm going to give him a chance because, man, the guy is super talented without a doubt. And this match to me was more of like a standard Impact match than the opener was. But Miguel did beat three former X Division champions, so that's going to add to his momentum. And I'm sure we're going to hear all about that. So this was basically a quick rehab match for Miguel to say, sure, he didn't win the Revolver match, but he is still a main fixture in the X Division going forward. And I think that's fair and reasonable. We then have Sami Callihan running into Trey backstage, and he tells him that he is somewhat impressed. He says that Trey failed at No Surrender because he lacks passion, and Trey looks angry and walks off without saying a word. So this was really similar to their interaction last week on Impact. I think Sammy's doing a good job here, and I'm kind of enthusiastic, I guess, to see him in a feud where he gets to wrestle instead of just brawling and hardcore matches and stuff like that, which seems to be where he settles in a lot of the time, which he does well. But he's actually a pretty talented wrestler, and he's good on the mic, and Trey isn't. So I thought that was a smart choice too, just have Sammy talk and Trey just react without really having to talk. I thought this was a good way to handle this segment. I have no problem with Sami Callihan and Trey having a bit of an interaction and a feud, I guess. I'm sure Trey is going to come out ahead because it seems like there's more focus on him than Sammy right now, but that's fine. That's how wrestling works. So I'm open to this pairing as well. Then we have Ace Austin in Scott DeMore's office with TJP, and Ace Austin is obviously upset, as he tends to be. He talks about being owed an X Division title shot from winning the X Cup, and I was like, thanks for the reminder. Any FNS regular listeners know my memory is pretty bad, so I am a big fan of when wrestlers sort of remind me of things that I may have forgotten. So DeMore does agree with Ace Austin that he does in fact deserve an opportunity, but he sort of says that others do as well. I'm sure implying Trey Miguel, right? Because he just won a match against three former champions. So he's saying, sure, you deserve a shot, but I think other people do as well. So DeMore then obviously uses that as a springboard to announce a six-man tag match where the winners will then go into a triple threat match to get an X Division title shot. So I'm okay with that. Another multi-man match, that's fine. Leading to a triple threat match, I'm also fine. Some people get sick of multi-man matches and stuff. I really don't mind them if they're done well. I find them generally pretty interesting because you can get a lot of different combinations, a lot of different things going on. So I'm open to this idea. Austin says that they can make him jump through as many hoops as they want, but him winning the title is inevitable, which is his new tagline. I think that he is inevitable, which I kind of liked. So then he leaves the room and DeMore and TJP make some sort of smart-alecky comment about, I think it was regarding Ace Austin's catchphrase sort of changing or something, which I didn't need, but whatever. It was just 2 seconds on the end. I actually like this segment a lot too. Heel Austin had a point. So does actually Scott DeMore, and the matches that have been set up should be fun. I thought Austin did a really good job here, and I mean, I've said it many times, I think he should be a cornerstone of this company when they feel like pulling the trigger on him. I think he could be a main eventer and a main title contender. I'm slightly disappointed he's back in the X Division mix, but glad that he's still getting focus put back on him. And the main event scene is kind of occupied right now. I think they know what they want to do with that. So at least they're keeping some focus on Ace Austin because I think he is an awesome competitor. Again, another young guy that's not known for being anywhere else. He can wrestle, he can talk. He's got a big heater with him in Fulton, Madman Fulton. I just like his act altogether, and I'm hoping that he gets a bunch of TV time going forward. But if you listen to this podcast, you know I love Ace Austin. We then have the match for the money with Hernandez, with Myers, Brian Myers with him, versus Matt Cardona. So again, Impact style, another fairly short match that saw Cardona escape a border toss and hit his radio silence finisher for the win. I was critical of Stryker earlier. I'll give him some credit here. I thought he did a good job of putting over Cardona as sort of this in-between. He's not completely old school, but he's not completely a new school young guy either. He's kind of bridging that gap between the older crew that they have on Impact and that younger crew. And I think that's true, and I think that's a good point. So I'll give him credit there when credit is due. Gia Miller comes down to congratulate Matt and sort of bait him into talking about Brian Myers. And Cardona says he isn't here for that. He's not passing a torch. He's lighting a new one. Myers then cuts him off and is outraged about Matt copying him. Cardona, and I like this little bit here. Cardona asks why Myers is fine outside the show and on their podcast, then has problems with him on Impact. And eventually Hernandez attacks Cardona from behind as this conversation is taking place until Eddie Edwards appears to sort of even the sides. Eddie then takes Hernandez out and Myers gets hit in the eye again. So he can sort of further that, which I kind of like. I thought this is what it needed to be. We're getting one step closer to Myers and Cardona in a match. I like that they acknowledge what we've all been sort of, or most of us, at least Jack and I, have been wondering, right? Like, these guys are buddies outside the ring. They have a podcast. We all know this. So you're asking us to suspend our disbelief, but they've actually incorporated it in the story because Cardona's wondering the same thing. How come we get along on the podcast? We get along outside of Impact. But here, I forget, it's like Moody, Bad Mood Myers or something like that. And I say it all the time, Myers and Cardona, even though you know I'm not the biggest fan of Cardona if you listen to this show, I think they're a great fit for Impact. They're not going to be stars anywhere else, no offense to them. They're not going to get high profile. We saw Matt Cardona in AEW and he didn't really get to do anything. But they can. There's room for them on Impact. They can get a spotlight on Impact. So I think these are the sort of people, if you're going to pull people from WWE, these are the types that you can use. They can get a higher profile on Impact than they can anywhere else. So I think, to me, that's a good fit. We then get a brief Finn Juice hype video, as they will be making an appearance on this show a little bit later. And then we get our what has turned out to be lately a weekly segment where Impact Wrestling is interrupted by a paid advertisement from AEW president Tony Khan, along with Tony Schiavone. So Khan said he didn't get anything for Valentine's Day, but he was here to give an Impact, sorry, to give Impact Wrestling what they've always wanted, money, by paying for this spot. And so if you listen to this show, you know I kind of like when they take the digs at Impact, even though I like Impact and I'm a fan of wrestling in general. I find his shots at Impact are the most entertaining parts of this. And he does say here that he's convinced his accountant to consider it a charitable donation for every spot he does on Impact, which I thought was pretty funny. They hype the next Dynamite and they compare Eddie Kingston to Michael Corleone from The Godfather here. And basically, Tony Khan says he has a surprise for Omega on Dynamite this week. This had some amusing lines, as I discussed, but this one went on a bit too long for me. It's like he paid for a double or triple spot this week. I like the shots at Impact being back and basically this idea that they're a second-rate company when compared to AEW, which is that wrong? I don't think that's wrong. So again, liked a couple spots from this, but generally thought it was just too long this week. We then move into Havoc and Nevaeh, sort of getting an update on where they stand, because as we talked about, it was Nevaeh walking out on Havoc at the end of their match at No Surrender, sort of trying to find out where they stand, I guess. So they're backstage to discuss the fallout from that loss to Fire and Flava at No Surrender, when Nevaeh just walked off in disgust. So combine their two names. Nope, it was Havoc. She asks Nevaeh why she hasn't gotten back to her. I guess she's been trying to reach out to Nevaeh since No Surrender and hasn't gotten a reply, and she wants to know why. Nevaeh points out that they keep losing and asks if maybe they shouldn't, should they even really be a team. Havoc is actually being pretty understanding here and is trying to console her, but Tennille Dashwood just sort of pops up with some advice, and I thought it was funny here because Tennille is basically, she says something along the lines of, "I wasn't eavesdropping, but I heard every word you just said," and that kind of made me laugh. Dashwood insults Nevaeh, who ends up saying, like, "I'm standing right here," and Dashwood suggests that Havoc and Tennille are both looking for partners, so why wouldn't they just form a team? Nevaeh gets upset by this, obviously, and challenges Dashwood to a match tonight. Dashwood actually accepts and thinks this will be her chance to prove to Havoc that she would be the better partner when compared to Nevaeh. So I honestly thought this was another good backstage segment and possibly the best acting by Havoc that I can remember, because I know I've been critical of her acting in the past. Again, they are asking what many fans likely are asking, like how many times can Havoc and Nevaeh lose to Fire and Flava and keep getting chances? So this show's sort of addressing some of the concerns and questions I've had. And it's like, hey, we hear you and we're trying to answer them. And I really appreciate that. It also clarifies a little bit further. It's always seemed this is what's going on, but Dashwood's gimmick is finding a tag partner, which I think is kind of funny because she's the most selfish person in wrestling right now, right? It's all about me is basically her whole thing. So I find it kind of interesting that the most selfish person really wants to be part of a tag team and that she's having trouble obviously finding partners and trying to find ways to force people almost to partner up with her. So we'll see where it goes. I think she's been underutilized to this point, so hopefully this is the start of something for Tennille. We then do get the debut of Finn Juice from New Japan as they take on Reno Scum in a tag team match. I love that some of the New Japan talent are at Impact. It does make Impact seem somewhat higher profile. I do see what Impact is gaining from these crossover relationships with other promotions. I'm not exactly sure what the other companies are gaining from their side of the relationship, but as a wrestling fan, I don't really care. Let's just mix and match people and get fresh matchups and fresh storylines. That's what I'm all about. So I'm on board for this. If it makes Impact better, who cares what's going on the other way, right? Let's make Impact a better product and worry about everything else later. So basically, just to summarize real quickly, Finn Juice win a short match with the Powerplex, although I did think that Reno Scum did get a lot here, especially near the beginning of the match. They were really on the offensive, And I guess that's because they're an established team, even within Impact Wrestling. They've been around, probably tag champions, if I think really hard about it. And I've seen them tons on the indies. I think Thornstow is actually a pretty talented wrestler. Luster, the legend, doesn't do much for me. I think he's a pretty limited big man, but that's okay. So yeah, they got a bit more offense than I might have given, considering it was Finn Juice's debut, but whatever, it was a pretty standard Impact match. The Good Brothers come out and they talk about how they love the young boys. They love when boys come in to pop the territory, and I despise the use by the Good Brothers and anyone else of this like insider backstage lingo. So the young boys and getting a pop in the territory, like all this kind of stuff, I don't think helps wrestling at all. And I don't know, I just have a problem with Gallows in general, as you're well aware. So I'm a little hypersensitive to everything that guy does. He just bugs me, frankly. We all have things that bug us more than they should. And I think for me, Gallows is on that list. They remember when Finn and Juice Robinson just carried their bags. Carl Anderson then welcomes them and offers to buy them some beer. Gallows says they should buy a few shots of their whiskey, thank them, and they'll have a big party. So basically, buy our merch, thank us for mentoring you or whatever, and then we can party. Juice Robinson basically says it's not 2015. They're not young boys anymore. They've got some credentials and accomplishments now as well. Finley then gets a chance to say something and refers to Anderson being a lightweight when it comes to drinking, I think, and maybe peeing himself when he drinks too much, something like that, which Anderson is obviously angry about as he's on the stage. So this was another short match to showcase Finn Juice really quickly. And I guess because of that goal, they met it. Reno Scum got a bit too much, as I said earlier, in a very short match, I think. The Good Brothers continue to annoy me, especially Gallows, as their entire gimmick is never looking bad and at the same time never making anyone else look good. They collect their checks, they push their merch, and they dominate whether they deserve to or not. It just really feels to me like they signed a contract that they were in demand, right? AEW probably wanted them, WWE maybe didn't, but they had options. They could have gone back to Japan, I'm sure. So it feels to me like they signed a contract where they have control of a lot of stuff within their characters and their push. And I don't think that ever really works out well. If you look back at WCW before their demise, they had far too many people who had control over things and could refuse to do things and refuse to put people over. So I don't know if that's what's happening. It's just me speculating. I am no insider in this industry. I'm just a guy who's watched a ton of wrestling in his life, and that's what this feels like to me, that they are sort of in control of their own pushes, and that generally doesn't work out well. But anyways, we then have Rohit Raju and Mahabali Shira are at the bar that seems to sort of be popping up at Impact these days. And Raju is blaming Shira for losing the X Division Championship match at Impact, because remember, they had that sort of miscommunication and Shira got knocked off the ring as he was trying to help Raju. So Shira pushes Rohit away, and sort of that sends him to bump into James Storm, who's sort of beside him at the bar. Cowboy then really doesn't say too much and eventually smashes a bottle over Raju's head, leading to a stare down between Storm and Shira, who sort of steps forward because I guess he still is Raju's muscle despite Rohit sort of criticizing him here. And I thought the first part was really good here. And then Johnny Swinger comes in, and I didn't even mind his little interaction at the bar. His character is sometimes amusing. But then this leads to him inviting Sabin and Storm to Swinger's palace, and they agree. So that's going to be the second part of this segment. And this is where, for me, if I'm being honest, this is where it goes right off a cliff real quickly. So then we're backstage at Impact Wrestling, and James Storm and Chris Sabin arrive at Swinger's palace and ironically enjoy the ridiculous atmosphere. So it's this idea they know it's crazy and ridiculous, but they're just going to sit back and enjoy it, right? And just take it all in, the craziness that's going on around them. And that's fine. They sit down at the poker table, where Falaba has once again getting kicked out after losing the latest $10 he borrowed from Hernandez. So he's sort of the, I think they're called the Swingerellas. His group of ladies are sort of escorting Falaba out of here. This sort of devolves into Storm at some point rapping a little bit, which was honestly very cringeworthy for me. It was super awkward. Alicia does some brief but really awful acting. She has like one or two lines and almost worth going to watch her deliver them because they're so bad. And this whole segment, honestly, in Swinger's Palace for me is embarrassing for pretty much everybody involved. If I weren't reviewing this for you guys, I would have skipped it. So hopefully you didn't have to endure this and you can just let me summarize it for you and tell you it was bad. It was really, really bad. Impact, whenever they lean into doing comedy, they produce some of the worst stuff I watch in wrestling each week. And believe me, I watch a lot of wrestling each week, probably more than is healthy. But it's kind of my guilty pleasure and just something in a pandemic, especially where I can just turn my mind off and watch some wrestling. And this is bad stuff. Impact doing comedy, it's like they try too hard and they try to go too big. And it just, for me, it falls short almost every time. This was disappointing because it started out pretty well. The part in the bar I had no issues with and kind of liked it. And then the part in Swinger's casino was awful. So then we do get our match between Tennille and Nevaeh. And this was a decent little match, actually. Nevaeh, who I knew nothing about before seeing her in Impact, I think she's quite capable. And Dashwood is as well. So Dashwood obviously won with her spotlight kick, as you figured was going to happen here. And I was fine with this. It furthers a story. It's forcing Nevaeh and Havoc to do something different going forward, which is a good thing. And I think Dashwood maybe is going to get a clearer direction going forward from this, as she's kind of, in my opinion, been floundering with nothing specific, right? Just sort of wandering aimlessly since arriving at Impact, in my opinion. And she has potential. I was excited to see her arrive. I've compared her to, she's the female, Impact doesn't even have to be female. I don't need to gender it. She's the Impact version of Miro for me. I thought she was underutilized in other places she's been. I was excited to have her arrive and was hoping for big things, and I've just been pretty consistently disappointed since she has arrived. And I feel the same about Miro, as you know, if you listen to our flagship Saturday programming. We then move into Violent by Design, and they are not thrilled with Jake something wanting to be something, basically. Diener speaks here, and he wants to finish this business with Jake next week in a tables match. He'll bring Jake to the table alone, and if he can't, he will suffer the consequences, since nothing is more important than Violent by Design and his family, which is his family, I guess. So I thought Diener was really good here. Again, since this shift in character, I think he's been very convincing. It's nice to see, as they say in acting, right? He seems to have range. He played the goofy, redneck, hick, hillbilly, whatever the Diener's thing was, for a really long time. And now he's showing me he can play the sort of intense, borderline, crazy, violent character. So that, to me, is pretty good range. Means he can probably hit most of the points in between those two things as well, which bodes well for him, I think. So I thought Diener was good here again. Violent by Design can continue to be one of the more interesting things and an interesting faction for me to sort of watch as a guy who likes factions on Impact. I would guess maybe that Jake's going to win again, because it seems like the rest of Violent by Design won't be there for this match. So I think Jake may again get another win here. I think that's good for him. He desperately needed this shift in character, as I talked about earlier, just like Diener did. And they both have it now. So hopefully they can keep moving forward with these new characters. We then go to Deonna, Perrazzo, Susan, and Kimberly talking backstage, and they have a proposal for Scott D'Amore. Deonna thinks Susan and Kimberly should get a shot at the Knockouts Tag Team Championships. D'Amore agrees, but again, he thinks that two great matches would be better than one. So he decides that Susan and Kimber can face Jazz and Jordan Grace next week, I assume for what would be the number one contendership to the Knockouts Tag Championships. And I thought this was another fine backstage segment. D'Amore is sort of continuing to give heels what they want, but only after they jump through a few hoops for him, which I think is honestly a decent way to go. And I definitely don't want a heel in charge. That's been so overdone in the last few decades of wrestling that I respect Impact's attempts to have a babyface sort of head of the company on camera. And I've had some issues with D'Amore sort of being sarcastic and kind of snarky, but this didn't bother me at all. I think he's sort of figuring out the sweet spot for his character right now, and I'm sort of okay with it. I'm not a fan of the Jazz Jordan Grace team, as Jazz just isn't fun for me to watch, as I said earlier, but Grace should be in the mix for the championship again soon, so I don't know if I want her to be contending for the Knockouts Tag Championships or not. We'll see. I guess we'll see where it goes. It's then main event time, and we get Moose versus Tommy Dreamer in an old school rules match, which essentially is just extreme rules slash no rules slash whatever the million names that mean the same thing, that there's no rules, you can do whatever you want. So we get cookie sheets, chairs, trash can lids, tables all make an appearance, as this match obviously was the story of Moose being physically dominant, with Dreamer just refusing to stay down and give in, and taking advantage sort of the old school rules whenever he can to try and make up the difference between his ability and Moose's ability at this point in his career. So somewhere near the end here, Moose dives through a table that he had set up in the corner as Dreamer sort of steps aside to avoid being speared through the table himself. But Moose eventually wins sort of shortly after this with a really big Uranagi and then his signature sort of flipping spear that he does. I actually like this match again more than I thought he would. I mean, maybe I'm coming around on Dreamer because I've been pretty critical of him in the past on this show, but I think he's doing good a job with this serious, like, I'm trying to do good things for wrestling gimmick. His promos have been believable. His matches haven't been bad. Moose, as you know, I feel is a star and should be their next champion, in my opinion. I would love Moose with the belt, and Josh Alexander would be my dream to chase it for a while, but that's just me. Who knows if Impact agrees with me or not. So that brings us to the end of that show, and overall, I quite like this episode, as I said at the beginning, of Impact, despite having a few issues with parts of it, right? The opener I thought was really good, and almost all of the backstage segments held my interest and further storylines, other than the Swingers Palace casino stuff was ridiculous. All the other backstage stuff I thought was really solid this week, and added to my enjoyment and added to some storylines and things. The main event was better than I expected. The debut of Finn Juice was nice to see, although it wasn't ideal to me, their debut, but it was good. The only real minus this episode was the segment in Swinger's Palace, which was tough to watch and made James Storm look ridiculous, unfortunately, because I think he's also another nice piece for Impact right now. The episode in general went by far more quickly than a lot of their episodes do, and I was mostly entertained while I watched it, so I gave it a very nice B+ this week. So not quite in the A category. Pretty close, though, if I'm being honest. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on the Swinger Palace segment, but it really was bad. It wasn't super long, so it could almost be an A-, but I am going to stick with my gut instinct of a B+. So overall, a good week of Impact wrestling. I thought the pay-per-view was pretty solid, and that the weekly offering of Impact on Tuesday night was better than solid, frankly. So yeah, that is my thoughts on Impact this week. That's going to bring me to the end of this first solo mission. So as always, I'm always asking for feedback. I don't get any. I know people are listening. I see the stats, but I don't. Please give me feedback, especially on something different like this solo mission. I don't know how this is going to be. This might be an awful hour of a podcast. I apologize if it is. I would love some feedback. Should we keep doing these solo missions just to put out extra content and to keep the Saturday show a little more manageable? Should I avoid solo missions? Should we put out more content, less content? How's the sound quality? How's our flow? How's the organization? Whatever. I would love any feedback from anyone, and you can do that at fnswrestling@gmail.com. That will come directly to me, or on Instagram at fns_wrestling_podcast, and that will more go to my son Jackson, but he will show me what comes through there as well. I would love to hear from any of you, and I hope that you can appreciate us sort of tinkering with the format right now. We just have to get to a point where we can still deliver this content in a non-corona time, and that's going to take some adjustments once we can do things on Saturday again. So hopefully you like this first foray into a solo mission. I'm sure there'll be more coming in the future. And as always, I really appreciate any time you give to listening to this podcast. My goal right now is to offer you an ad-free, sponsorship-free, no begging for Patreon, no looking for money, no looking for anything. I just enjoy doing this. I enjoy doing podcasts. I enjoy broadcasting. I enjoy nerding out on wrestling and just talking about wrestling with my son, something we can do and enjoy together. And as a person who listens to a million podcasts a week, I get frustrated by the ads. I get frustrated by the promotional spots. I get frustrated by the pleas for money. And maybe we get to that point, I don't know, and we just get super famous and I start making money. That's not what I want right now. I just want to give you guys content. I want people to listen, and I just want people to sort of let me know what they think of it. So anyways, I'm rambling at this point. So let's sign off. Thanks to everybody for giving me any time this week to listen to me talk about wrestling and my son, Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow with both of us doing what we usually do, breaking down AEW Dynamite, breaking down NXT, and whatever else happens to come up. So thanks again for listening, and until tomorrow, take care.